She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. This show is sponsored by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, whose mission is to provide services, training, and jobs to people with barriers to employment, and indeed they do. Thank you, Goodwill, for your support of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision. And you know, I hope everybody is ready for yet another incredible, impressive, knowledgeable, passionate guest who will be talking with us about a topic of major importance, monumental importance to our planet, the last ocean. I'm going to give him in this beginning of the show a long introduction because it will set the stage for the depth and breadth of his knowledge and experience. So just bear with me. His name is Peter Young. He is the director of The Last Ocean, a film about the Ross Sea and the politics of Antarctica's Ross Sea. So, who is Peter Young? He's an award-winning documentary cameraman and producer. He came to filmmaking the long way, spending the first 10 years of his life working on the land and sea, over which time he developed a strong connection to the great outdoors and the people who live and work there. Peter established Fisheye Films in Christchurch, New Zealand in 1997 and has worked as a freelance director and cameraman ever since. He has credits in well over 100 documentaries, among them the BBC's Blue Planet series, a giant squid documentary for Primetime Discovery. He filmed many of the South Island Country Calendar episodes, the acclaimed TVNZ series, Explorers, and the final tribute documentary for Sir Edmund Hillary. He has produced and shot the award-winning series Hunger for the Wild for TVNZ, which is TV New Zealand, and is now working on a second series of Coasters, which I want to ask about. He has recently completed his first feature documentary, The Last Ocean, a project that began in 2006. And this labor of love has expanded into the formation of a charitable trust to promote the protection of the Ross Sea, Antarctica, the world's most pristine marine ecosystem. And I want to say the world's most pristine ecosystem. This is big stuff, people. And I just want to do a little bit about the kind of awards and recognitions that he has gotten, because I think it's really important. In 2014, Vancouver Festival of Ocean Films, the grand prize, Best Conservation Film, 2014, New York Wild Film Festival, Spirit of Activism Award, 2014, Wild and Scenic Film Festival. I bet he could win a Wild and Crazy Guy Festival, too. I just have to inject a little of my humor in there because he's going to be a great guest. People's Choice Award 2014. I think it's Waimea Ocean Film Festival. And Best Film Ocean Environment 2014. Is it Waimea Ocean Film Festival again? Is that right, Peter? Did you say it Waimea?
Yeah, Waimea, in Hawaii.
Waimea. Why yeah. Mia? I should think of that. Why Mia? Why wasn't Mia there to be a part of seeing you do this film? So thank you for being on our show. You have such an incredible story to share. And let's get started. I sometimes hesitate to do such long introductions, but I want people to know who you are and what your life's work has been about. So let's talk about you a little bit. Where did you start your filmmaking career? Is that where you started oh so many years ago? And, of course, we know the answer to that. What happened?
Well, I always thought I'd be a farmer, actually, because I love the land. And so I spent the first 10 years of my life working on the land and on what we call sheep stations or cattle stations here, you call ranches in the States. And so I just developed this love for the great outdoors and the people that work there. And to cut a long story short, I ended up traveling, doing what we call in New Zealand our overseas experience, our OE, where because we're two islands in the middle of the Pacific, we all like to get out and see the world before we come back home and settle. And the first port of call for me was I got a job down in Antarctica in the Ross Sea as a dishwasher. And that really started this wonderful adventure of the next few years. I worked at McMurdo Station, which is a US base in the Ross Sea, and I met a lot of Americans there. I was a young man, 25 years old, and just really enjoyed the people and the culture. And so when I finished in the Ross Sea, which was a remarkable place, and there it does do a full circle. We'll talk about the Ross Sea later. But when I finished in the Ross Sea as a dishwasher, I ended up going to the States and got a job on a fishing boat through friends and contacts. And I worked in Alaska on a halibut and black cod boat. And at that stage, I'd been, as I said, working on the land before that, and I left New Zealand and I just thought, I'm not too sure what I want to do when I come back home, but I'll just go for this little adventure and we'll see what happens. And on the fishing boat, the skipper had a video camera, one of the first video cameras that came out. It was 30 years ago. And so I picked it up and just started doing a home video of our trip around Alaska. And I absolutely loved it, just talking to the people and filming, and I thought, this is what I want to do. This is my calling, basically.
You really did have a Kodak moment. It's like, wow.
It was a Kodak moment. Actually, I'm not too sure what sort of camera it was. But
I don't even think people know what a Kodak moment is anymore, but it's okay. It dates me.
Yeah. So I came back to New Zealand, and I retrained myself, and at 28 years old, I got into filmmaking and have been involved in it ever since. And, you know, it's something that I love doing and I still love it. And so that's how I got into making films, Gina. I did go the long way around.
But it's really...
But it gave me a lot of life experience in those first years.
It was preparing you for this big journey that you're on now. So is this a good point at which to ask you, tell us about the Ross Sea. Where is it? Why is it so important? And just start painting us a picture for the pristine and magnificent area that you're working so hard to protect.
Yeah, the Ross Sea is a very remote corner of the Earth. It's as far south as you can go on the ocean, and it's about 3,000 kilometres below New Zealand. So when you go there, it takes about 8 days to steam south from New Zealand, and you bust ice for about 3 days, and then you get through this big protective ring of ice which encircles Antarctica, and you get the inner sanctum of the Ross Sea, which is these big areas of large open water. And you are in a very, very special place in the world because it has been untouched and it's had very little human impact. And it's just, you know, I went there as a dishwasher and I fell in love with the place, actually, back then as a dishwasher. So 7 years ago, I got invited to go down with on this trip by a Colorado photographer, and that's how we went down on a vessel. And it teems with wildlife. It's the most productive stretch of ocean in the entire Southern Ocean, and a lot of the species are found nowhere else on Earth. You've got your penguins and your whales, and although you see whales, but you know they have this amazing ecosystem there, and it's lots of amazing icebergs and ice scapes and landscapes, and then amongst it the wildlife, and you know that you're somewhere very, very special. And
it sounds like it literally captured your soul. I mean, it's like this is you don't pristine wilderness and untouched and so uninhabited. You got to see something that most of us in our lifetime will never get to experience other than through seeing things like your film. So it really grabbed your soul and took hold.
It did. And one of the things that really got to me was the fact that it was, that what you were watching was behavior, animal behavior that has been developed over millions of years in this remarkable corner. And it felt a real privilege that to be there. And you felt, I felt that I was witnessing one of the treasures of our planet. When you see nature operating and functioning in that absolutely pure way, And then, I love the place because as a cameraman, the filming is just wonderful. The wildlife's wonderful. You can walk right up to it. They have no concept of humans being
a
predator
threat,
anything of concern. They just walk straight up to you. But when I was down there, I discovered that the commercial fishing had just begun in the Ross Sea and that New Zealand had led the charge.
Right.
And not many people knew it at this stage. John, who I went down with, the Colorado photographer, he had been speaking to a US scientist, Dr. Dave Ainley, who'd been studying the Ross Sea for 30, 40 years.
Right.
He'd been going down. And so they knew about it, and that's why I was invited down. But besides, you know, a small number of people, no one really knew about the issue. And so I just thought, actually, this is wrong. We shouldn't be down there, and it's New Zealand doing it. And so we just started this raising awareness of the fact that we're fishing in this last untouched stretch of ocean, and we shouldn't. And that was the beginning of the journey, and it's... That was 8 years ago, and it finished with the film, which you can see now, but the campaign is still going. We're calling for protection of the Ross Sea.
And, you know, it's interesting to me because I'd like to know a little bit more about the man that was quoted in the film in 1996, Stuart Pryor, not in 1996, but he, from the New Zealand Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade, he said we were going to allow for fishing in the area under the most strict precautionary basis. How is that working? Is managed fishing waters possible, or is it devastating? You know, to me, I always think of it as the ripple effect. Once you start permeating and changing an ecosystem, it's a ripple effect. You don't just take some fish out. It's the circle of life that now gets interrupted. So what is your view on the, you know, the policy of, if it is a strict precautionary basis, can you do it without really starting to destroy that fragile ecosystem?
No, you can't do it without destroying that ecosystem, Gina, and that's the heart of the issue. If you take a top predator out of any ecosystem, it does have that ripple effect, and it's not a ripple, it actually gets bigger as it makes its way down the food chain. And so you are going to destroy the natural balance. And that was the real treasure of the Ross Sea, was the natural balance of that ecosystem. And so no matter how well that fishery is managed, it's still going to destroy the thing that's really special about the Ross Sea. And our argument was that there shouldn't be any fishery there because we need to recognize, in context of the state of the world's oceans, we need to recognize these last special places, of which there's only about 2% of the ocean left. And so that's why we wanted to see it protected. Now,
leave it alone. Leave it alone.
Why can't you just leave it alone?
Leave it alone. I know.
Well, the fire that was burning in my belly. I thought, why do we have to come 8 days, you know, by boat, 3 days through ice, to get to this place, to catch fish, to sell to New York? You know, where is the sense in that? And you're destroying this absolute jewel in the crown.
Forever. Forever.
Exactly.
So what about, you know, the segue to that is, you really did produce an award-winning film, and there are lots of them out there competing for awards. I hope you're so proud of the recognition and acknowledgement you've gotten from the film industry. But tell us some of the, I like to ask the Inside Edition questions. What were some of the biggest challenges you had in making an award-winning film? like this? Was it money? Yeah. Was it getting people there? Or
As a filmmaker, you never know how right. your baby is going to be received in this world. And right up until the last moment, you don't know if it's going to succeed or not. But for me, this was a different project because it was a very long journey. And I didn't even know. So what happened was that I got invited down to the Ross Sea with John right. Weller, this Colorado photographer. And early on, John, Dave, and I decided to work together and raise awareness. And so after the initial filming, I thought I'd better find out about this issue. And so I took myself to Hobart, to the seat of politics, and that's where the organisation that governs the Ross Sea comes and meets every year. And so I did that, and then we thought, well, let's get this formalised, let's start a campaign. And so I put the filming on the back burner and focused on actually just raising awareness. So we created the trust, and then we toured New Zealand, and John and Dave did the States, and we just talked to people about the Ross Sea. We put together these little clips and did a PowerPoint presentation. And I filmed things as we went. I didn't know where the story was going to go or right. what the story would be, but I just filmed events over the next 3 years. And then, I always knew that we needed to finish the documentary because the documentary will be the most powerful tool in your campaign. And so I got back to the documentary, and I spent the last year just focusing on finishing it and filming it and putting it together on a timeline and working out, who our characters are in the narrative, and then creating the film, and because that's a totally different sort of skill. And, I knew I was dealing with big themes because it is called The Last Ocean for a reason, and it is a global issue, but you still need to create something that people will sit down in the theatre and identify with and empathise with. And so I think, getting back to it, one of the challenges is, one, creating that end product and right. just being able to throw stuff out, because at the end of the day, if you can't create a compelling 80 minutes, you're doing injustice to all the things that are in there. And the challenges for me were going into these political situations, because I'm not a political person at all. This is the first time I actually felt compelled to get from behind the camera and go and do something. And so that was daunting, but it was a huge... It's been an amazing journey because it's taken me to all these places that I never would have dreamt of going. And I can see now... I have a much better understanding of how the world works, and especially in the international politics, because I've been to these meetings now for two or three times, and which, we haven't talked about, but the Ross Sea is fascinating because it belongs to the world. It's not, there's no native population there. There's no sovereignty, and Antarctica itself was set up as a preserve for peace and science 50 years ago, and what is one of the the best international agreements we've really had. But we've sort of shifted sideways there, Gina.
No, but it's, I'm listening. When I'm quiet, it's like I'm going down the rabbit hole with you, because it's like this is part of the story. And the political arena, it's so poignant for me, because when you do what you do, which is create a lens for people about nature, going into the political arena is like in foreign, you're talking about uncharted waters. And I understand that. It's like, you're not a politician. You're someone that wants to create messages through the beauty of your film. So that part, I'm like, yeah, that is a really big move for you to have to take, and a very courageous move, given any political arena from my opinion. I'm getting very discouraged from that. So we have to take our first break in about, 50 seconds. And when we come back, I'd really, I I want to talk about, there's some humor in the beginning. I want to know who did that part with the interview for New York. I never heard of the Ross Sea. I mean, I'm from New Jersey. I'm Mrs. Green. I never heard of the Ross Sea. And they were asking, is that on the east side? So there was definitely humor to get me excited about it. Yeah, I know.
And we didn't finish about Stuart Pryor, too.
We have to talk about
Stuart
him.
He was a great character.
A great character. And, you know, we have a lot more to talk about, what changes have come about. And, you know, to me, the power of the people. I like my show to be about what can people do that takes it out of the hands of the politicians or gets their attention. So everybody, stay here with me. Peter Young, the filmmaker, award-winning filmmaker, director of The Last Ocean. Stay here with me. We'll be right back. Hi there. This is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine. It's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines. It gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love. Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange. Sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I'm 100% certain if you've been with us since the beginning, you're thinking a lot about the Ross Sea. You're probably Googling it, finding out where it is, reading things about it like I was. The Ross Sea, never heard of it. And now I could probably pass a quiz on some of the things that I have learned about the Ross Sea. Our guest is Peter Young. He is the director of The Last Ocean, a film about the Ross Sea and the politics of Antarctica's Ross Sea. And I just have two very short announcements about Mrs. Green's World. We're so proud that our membership program is alive and growing. We'd love for you listeners to become an official supporter of Mrs. Green's World so we can bring to you great programming like this. You can do so by visiting our website at mrsgreensworld.com and click on the Preserve Our Planet icon in the upper right-hand corner and become official member of our growing community of people who care about the planet. We really do hope you'll do just that. And then please remember that we can now officially say there's an app for that when talking about listening to our podcast. It's called Igloo Radio. And again, if you visit our homepage, click on Download Free Mobile App, you are there. It works for all mobile devices. And I am so appreciative of the great feedback we're getting from our listeners about how easy it is and about how they don't have to stay at their computers to listen to our shows anymore. And they're catching up. So that's really good for us. So back to our show. As I said, Peter Young is an award-winning documentary cameraman and producer. He had a long journey to becoming a filmmaker. He has had to touch the political arena to support the passion that he now lives with, the preservation of the last ocean, the Ross Sea. So, Peter, let's talk about if we can, go back to, in 1996, Stuart Pryor. If the area is not really owned, is that the right way to say it? It is a protected area. So
there were claims.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Prior to the Antarctic Treaty being set up, there were historical claims by mostly the Southern Hemisphere countries.
But right.
50 years ago, Antarctic was set aside by nations. That was a remarkable agreement. It was in the middle of the Cold War, and they decided to turn the continent into a preserve, the peace and science, but they left out the oceans around the continent, and that was the problem, really.
That was a big mistake.
Getting back to your question.
Well, I mean, so New Zealand allowed for fishing under the most strict precautionary basis. So how does that work? So if I'm a fisherman from Russia or the Ukraine or the United States, do I now have to go through the New Zealand Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade to allow for fishing? Are those protocols enforced? How does it work?
So what happened was that after setting up the treaty, they people started exploiting the waters around Antarctica, and they realized, actually, we need to manage the waters as well. And so they set up another body called the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources. We call it CAMLAR.
Okay, and I read about that.
Yeah, CAMLAR is the... It comprises of 25 nations that meet once a year, and they basically govern those waters now. And so if a nation wants to fish, it needs to apply to CAMLAR to get permission. And so in 1996, Stuart Pryor was head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Antarctic Policy, and he applied to on behalf of a New Zealand fishing company to go into the Ross Sea to fish. And it was under the strict precautionary basis, and that's how CAMLAR does operate. So
right.
It manages these fisheries, but so any nation that wants to fish in the Ross Sea has to go through CAMLAR to get approval. And so that's what happened in 1996. What happened after that is that when they discovered the Antarctic toothfish in the Ross Sea, which is sold as Chilean sea bass, so it's got a name change and it goes to North America basically and gets sold as Chilean sea bass. When they discovered this great resource, there's all these other nations that wanted to come in, and so the fishery just it kind of exploded overnight. But they all had to go through the CAMLAR organization and apply, but there was a lot more boats. Basically, you know, I guess as soon as they knew the resource was there, people wanted to they come in. They were worried about missing out.
Right. If it's not about the money, it's about the money, and they can make a lot of money.
But as Stuart said, it turned into something that they never intended.
Right.
And, you know, in the film, Stuart turned right around and said, actually, we shouldn't be there. It was a mistake, and we should be out. And that was a really brave thing to do for a diplomat.
Yes.
And that was a wonderful and powerful, you know, part of the film.
So their intentions were good, but it's devastating. You know, I have to be, I hope that this doesn't insult you, but more cracks you up. I like to watch Whale Wars. I do, with my niece.
Yeah.
Okay, I admit it. Because it makes me suffer, and it keeps my consciousness really sharp. How do you begin to police or enforce an area that is so vast? The sea is so vast. What do they do?
It is huge.
I mean, how can you even do it?
Well, and that's a question that does get asked often, because it is right down the bottom of the world, and it is always a challenge. But there's a few things in the favor of the Ross Sea. The first is that for most of the year, it's surrounded by solid ice, so you can't get in. So the fishing season is actually only 3 months.
Great.
That's when you can actually enter the Ross Sea. And at the same time, you have a lot of concentrated activity with flights going back and forth from New Zealand down to the US base and the New Zealand base. And so there is a lot of activity there. The other thing is that if they do protect the Ross Sea, which there is a proposal on the table now at CAMLAR to create a very large marine protected area, you will have, if they get it through, and they're very close to getting it through, you'll have political buy-in, because if they've made the effort to establish this marine protected area, they will want to ensure that it is upheld. But it will always be a challenge, Gina, but you know, that's the least of our worries, really. I think the main thing is to get it over the line first. But so the Ross Sea is, it's not an insurmountable challenge, but it's always there.
It's always there. And, you know, I wonder always when I interview guests like you that have such a big mission and so important. I believe that. When people have said to me, you know, you need to narrow your focus on your show because you carry such a vast array of content. And I say, well, I have narrowed my focus. It's the planet because that every bit of it really matters. But do other organizations... are they helping? Like, one of the best interviews I ever did, honestly, was with Andy Sharpless from Oceana. And mm-hmm. I've been to this Monterey Bay Aquarium, Seafood Watch, Sustainable yeah. Foods Institute. Are those organizations helping? I mean, there's always my cause and your cause and his passion yeah. and all of this, but are they helping? Because there is strength in numbers, usually.
There is. And it's really interesting here. I'm bringing up Monterey, the Seafood Watch, but there is there's a wonderful alliance called the Antarctic Ocean Alliance, which has a lot of the major NGO organizations that have joined to try and protect not only the Ross Sea but other areas around Antarctica, because they identified, you know, that this is actually probably the most pristine waters that we do have. The Ross Sea is the crown and the jewel, but the Antarctic Ocean Alliance are working to create protection of, you know, a lot more spots. So, it has been recognised by all these other NGOs, and so they have got together and they are running a campaign together, which is great. Now, the Seafood Watch, because this is, I toured with my film in North America last year. We went to a lot of film festivals and we were campaigning for it, raising awareness of the Ross Sea. And during that time, the Seafood Watch put Antarctic toothfish in the, I forget what category it was.
I know, and you know what? I'm allergic to fish, but I tell everybody about the app. I give them out at presentations and at conferences, but there's like the safe to eat, cautious, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then there's the do not eat, and that's not the names.
Yeah, and this is getting to the Marine Stewardship Council too. There's a little gray area in there, and because the Marine Stewardship Council and the Seafood Watch sort of work under the same ideology, which is they look at the science around a fishery and they try and determine, is this sustainable or is it not? And so that is good to a certain extent. But when you go to a place like the Ross Sea, which is so pristine and so special, they have no way of measuring the value of that ecosystem in global terms. And that is a downfall of that system. They don't place a value judgment on something. And so we went and we just played the film to them and said, look, this needs special consideration because of these reasons. And so that's an issue that they need to be dealing with, and they were, you know, really appreciative of it. And
they were receptive. Please tell me.
Oh, yeah, they were receptive. No, it's great.
I can't imagine that they weren't.
Those organizations do, they've done a good job, but the trouble is they need to be seen in the context of, you know, the bigger picture. And like the Marine Stewardship Council, which is the green tick you'll see on some of these species and that you see in your supermarkets, you know, there are people there that say it's becoming a bit of a marketing tool for the fisheries. And then there's people there that, you know, on the other side and say, oh, no, it's good. But that's the trouble anyway for me. And in regards to the Ross Sea, they're selling Chilean sea bass that come from the Ross Sea, and they're not, as I said, considering the value of the ecosystem that the fishery takes place in. So, you know, that's the flaw, because we shouldn't be there, Gina.
And that's the quintessence of the message of this film. It's not about the fishing or the penguins or the whales. It's about all of them. It's about a complete ecosystem. And once you pierce that veil, it's a slippery slope. So to me, it's like Mrs. Green's world. Yeah, it's about the planet, because you can't put these things in silos and think, well, it's okay if we just do this, without measuring the impact of what's happening over here. I mean, I just think your film, like I said, it's the quintessence of protecting an entire ecosystem, not just measuring if there's enough fish so that it could be approved for eating by rich people in New York City, where it has to be transported great distances.
that's right.
By fossil fuel.
Yeah,
I had to get it all in there.
It's probably a reflection of where we're at, you know, globally, because why else are you going all the way to the bottom of the world to catch your fish? It's because we're actually running out everywhere. And it's just, when I started this project, when I went to the Ross Sea, I thought, if we're, look, I don't know if we will ever stop fishing in the Ross Sea, but if we're going to fish, I want people to know what the real cost of that catch is. And that was why, you know, I just thought, well, I've got to do this, because at least we're going to make a conscious decision and question our values, question the values that take us down there, and as opposed to the value of, you know, the money that it earns, because that's pittance, really. It's just ridiculous. When you stack them up, it's ridiculous, the cost of that fishery.
And I love that you made that point in one of your interviews, and I say that sometimes. I used to buy $5 T-shirts at Target for every holiday. And then I had some people from the fashion industry, the eco-fashion industry, like Marcy Zaroff, come on my show. And I don't buy those $5 shirts anymore, because I know at what human cost, the human capital involved in getting me a $5 shirt from Target, because I want all my kids to look alike on 4th of July. So we're not doing that anymore. But it is exactly the same thing. It's, you know, be conscious that you have the blood of children on your body. Literally, I say these dramatic things to people. Like, yeah, well, that was made by little children in China that have to work 16 hours a day, 5 days a week, but I hope you enjoy it. So, anyway, I'm usually not that awful.
But you're right. But that is our challenge, isn't it? Where to, you know, where you'll put your energy. And, but every little step towards it is a positive step towards making it better and making the planet better. I mean, we're on a slippery slope, Gina.
Very slippery slope.
So, and the Ross Sea was the one that I thought, that's how I'm going to put my energy into.
That's what I'm going to focus on. Point.
And so, I've got to say, you know, the best thing that your viewers could do is just ask the supermarket, where does a Chilean sea bass come from? Make sure it doesn't come from the Ross Sea, and tell them about the Ross Sea and say, apparently, so Safeway is not selling Chilean sea bass from the Ross Sea. Whole Foods has come out and said that they're not going to sell Chilean sea bass from the Ross Sea. Make sure that the guys at your local supermarket know about that and ask them where it comes from, so that they're asking their distributors the same question. Or the restaurants, you know, Chilean sea bass itself is a threatened species, but you know, if you needed to get a bit of, we couldn't broaden our focus that much. We were just saying, well, okay, let's start with just the Ross Sea. Let's not eat the fish that come from the Ross Sea.
And it's one of my most passionate areas that I'm focusing on now as Mrs. Green. The power of the consumer is so untapped. And if people started doing that, like I go to restaurants and I said to you, I'm allergic to fish, and someone will order it. And I'll say, do you know where that, you know, salmon is sourced? Is it farm salmon? Is it, you know, just kind of plain dumb, and asking people. And I would say, you know, 90% of the time the server has no idea. They have to go and ask. And sometimes the person, unless it's a locally owned restaurant, which I eat in 90% of the time, they don't know. So it's a really easy thing to do. It's not making anybody feel small. It's just raising the consciousness and saying, I don't know. And then going to find out. So I think that's a really good point. When we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the fisherman's perspective, because I've had some great guests on who have actually started doing, you know, kind of like alternative careers for fishermen, starting large projects because it is their livelihood. So I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit and a little bit more about the role of consumer. And then what's happened since you have been touring the country? What changes? And a little bit about, or as much as you want to talk about, your charitable trust, because I think that it's calls to action are important. And I never know from my listeners who gets inspired to do what, but I know that I have so many friends that carry their little Seafood Watch card with them and they have the app on their phone. So there's things that we can do. And then anything else that you want to throw in, and when are you coming to do the next round of of speaking so our paths will cross? Maybe I just have to come to New Zealand and hear the whole story directly from you.
Well, that would be nice.
It's on my bucket list, man. It is a very, very expensive place to get to. So
yeah, everybody, it's not as far as everyone thinks, though.
That's right. And, okay, so everybody stay here with us. We are going to have more great information from Peter Young from The Last Ocean. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And our guest today is Peter Young, and he is certainly giving us things to think about and wonderful calls to action. If you have just joined us, be sure that you listen to the podcast once it's posted. I promise you'll thank me. It's been a great content-rich show. Peter is an award-winning documentary cameraman and producer. He came to filmmaking the long way, spending the first 10 years of his life working on the land and sea, over which time he developed a strong connection to the great outdoors and people who live and work there, not the smallest piece of which is his love for this project. Began when he visited the Ross Sea as a dishwasher. And I think that's a wonderful part of the story. It's like you never know where your life's journey is leading you. And he went to the Ross Sea in the Antarctica, and now he has produced this film about the Ross Sea and the politics of Antarctica's Ross Sea. So, Peter, thank you so much. High praise, high five from Mrs. Green for all your great work.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Green, for your good work, too.
Well, it's just, I get up every day, and it's things like this. I get a big smile on my face. I'm going to get to interview Peter Long, who produced this unbelievable documentary. So, there's a whole philosophical churning in me at times about the power of the consumer. It's evolved. I mean, we look so much to policymakers to affect change. And yet in history, like in the United States, we have organic milk because mothers said, don't put those antibiotics and those growth hormones in my children's milk. and they boycotted. So now almost every supermarket in America has an certified organic milk choice. How much hope is there for getting everybody worked up enough that the consumers can start making a difference? If the fishermen fish and there's no market for it, the shift has occurred.
That's right. And it is, it's the most, I think, the simplest and a very empowering thing to do. And that's where I think the hope for this, for the issue lies, really, because, you know, the politics is a totally different game, and that has its own rules and a mind of its own. That's what we've discovered in
it's
this issue.
It's daunting. It's daunting to try and get things
changed. Well, it's
changed
amazing.
That way.
Yeah. And we, you know, going to these meetings, these CAMLA meetings, you can do all the work, all the background. There can be hundreds of people gathering to try and reach some sort of an agreement. And it all falls down to whether two men get along with each other or not. It's very fickle. Very, very fickle. So, you know, the consumer, that's what we've been focusing, because we're actually a grassroots movement, and we've, I guess, raised awareness of the issue. It's in the hands of the upper echelons of international politics. We've come back down to grassroots, and we're just going for the consumer, because that's a very powerful end of the market as well, if you know what I mean.
And do you know that song? We've got the power, and it's again dating me, but we really do, and that is what every show of mine is about. We have the power. The power is in the hands of the consumers globally to make the changes we really want to see in the world, and that's my life's work, is getting people to know about people like you, and then our listeners to become aware that they have the power to make the changes without politicians, without waiting for the politicians to squabble over how it's all going to be divided up or whatever.
Yeah.
I want to ask
about... We can't afford to wait.
We can't afford to wait.
No, and you can just make these decisions every day of your life, really simply.
And if people just look at your trailer, they'll get sucked in and want to see the film. There's no question about it. When you see it in the beginning, I mean, it really did make me laugh because, like I said, I'm a Jersey girl from a long time ago, and those guys saying Ross C, where's that? I mean, it was very funny. It was hysterical.
I love the beginning of that film because you couldn't get two exact opposites on the planet. Really, we've got this lone penguin. Absolute isolation on its own, and then you cut to Times Square in New York City.
Oh my gosh, it was great.
And that was I was quite nervous because I went out and did those interviews, and you know, for a lad from New Zealand going to New York, it was a little bit daunting. And I thought, oh, I wonder how this is going to go. Whether I'll be good, you know, what I'll be told.
It was
great. Interview. That guy who gave us that first interview was the very first person I asked, and it was just hilarious. It was perfect.
It was perfect. Oh my God! Talk about you had me from hello. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's important. I wanted to start with a little bit of humor, and bring humor in because you know there's so much of the other bad stuff that we could look at and focus at, but we need to celebrate our things as we go along. And so part of that film was being able to have a laugh, being able to understand why it's special, and I wanted people to fall in love with the Ross Sea like I did, and then care for it, and at the end, importantly, end on a bit of hope, because this is a place that we can make a change and make a difference to. And you know, we're nearly there. We have there's a big large marine protected area on the table at CAMLA. It's been presented by the New Zealand and the US governments. And so, you know, hopefully we'll get there.
So,
but it's not what we wanted. You know, we wanted to protect the whole Ross Sea, to protect that ecosystem. The trade-off is that fishing will be allowed to carry on at a managed level. They're going to reduce the the biomass of Antarctic toothfish by 50%, so it will destroy that ecosystem.
But that's so soon. I mean, it's just, it's not, the clock is ticking. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I want to ask, like, what I call the deep thought question. It's like, okay, don't get nervous, Peter, but not every filmmaker who produces a film, and there are some, you know, I think of my friend Chris Jordan, the who's doing the film about the Midway Islands. Not every one of them starts a charitable trust to help protect all that you witnessed, all that you know is well worth protecting from generations to come. Is this going to be your life's work until you've completed it? Has it been all-consuming?
It has been all-consuming. It's for the last 5 or 6 years, well, 7 years, actually. And we set up the trust because when making the documentary, I thought, okay, this is documentary is going to call for change, and you need that foundation, so you need your community and also a place to go for people to get the facts and the point of view and the perspective. And, you know, we are one perspective in this issue. But that's why we set up the trust. I feel, Gina, like if we get them reserved through this November at Kamla, and as I said before, of the 25 nations that vote at Kamla, 23 nations support this proposal. Ukraine and Russia have been the two countries holding out. And, you know, so we'll see. It'll be very interesting to see what actually happens this year.
And does it take a unanimous vote?
Yeah, Kamla works on consensus.
Oh, my
gosh. And so everything to do with the Antarctic and with Antarctica and the Antarctic Treaty System works on consensus. So they don't have to actually vote for the marine protected area, but they can't oppose it, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So countries can come into a position of neutrality. And that's, you know, ideally what we'd like to bring these nations that oppose it into that position. So if that goes through this November, that will be our work done. We are a small sort of husband and wife team, and for Last Ocean itself, and we feel that we've done, you know, we've put our heart and soul into this over the last 7 years. We need to get on with our life and
find another cause, which I'm sure you will.
Well,
there are many of them out there.
But you got to choose them carefully.
Yes, yes. And if you can see this to fruition, what an accomplishment in terms of your life's work. I mean, it would be really great. So how do people actually donate to the cause, or how do they make contributions? Is it I didn't follow through to that point yet.
Yeah, well, we've got a website, lastocean.org.
Right, right.
And they can donate there either from the U.S. through Oikonos, which is a, gives you the whatever that tax, you know,
right,
allows the
makes
donations
it all,
to
all
be
that back-end stuff that makes
taxable.
It work.
Yes, yeah, it does all that. And then for through New Zealand. So they can donate through that way. And we'll be going to Kamla again this meeting in November, which is in Hobart, and bringing this issue to the fore. Antarctic Ocean Alliance will be there. We'll be really hoping for that result. But
and it's just not that far away.
As I say, It's not that far away, but, you know, we've had this turn of events in Russia and Ukraine, and it will be interesting to see.
Yeah, I keep my show very apolitical, but I wouldn't put any, I mean, I am just not a big Putin fan, I can tell you that right now. And it's my show, so I can say that. It's a very unfortunate turn of events, so
what I was going to say was the Kamla itself has made a commitment to establish a network of marine protected areas around Antarctica. So they self-imposed this, wish to upon themselves as a group. They said, okay, we need to start protecting. So if they can't protect the Ross Sea, then they need to really question, okay, well, what can we do? We're not just a fisheries management tool. they are set up to conserve Antarctic marine living resources. And they're based on really good principles. So I think what this issue does is it brings to the fore the situation of the world. And I just really hope we can get a little bit of good coming out of it. You know,
it's what keeps you and I going. We have to think in the ultimate good of people will prevail, or I couldn't be Mrs. Green and you couldn't help, you know, work to preserve the last ocean. I mean, we have to be about hope and possibility, if you ask me. It's like, otherwise it is too daunting. What about
back to your own, what you can do, don't you? Because
yes.
It does, if you look at that, it's daunting, but when you take one little step at a time,
totally.
You get somewhere.
Totally. If they become a member of your Facebook page, I mean, all of those things are small steps that create a big impact. That's what I say to people when they say, where do I start? One small step. And if we all start, you know, taking them every day, ask your restaurant manager where the fish came from. It's not hard. It's just one simple question. And it makes everybody at your table look at you as well. And I mean, it's not like it takes a lot of courage to ask that question. Where did you get your fish? And it just creates what we call, you know, the good ripple effect. I just want to say before we run out of time, because I do this, next week we have Bridget Luther, who's the president of Cradle to Cradle Products Innovation Institute, a very different trajectory to go off on. She's a mom on a mission to protect our children and our environment. And Cradle to Cradle is a concept that I absolutely love. And it's all part of our big mission of creating a global community of people who care about the planet. So, Peter, the last word is yours. And one of the things I'd like to do is figure out how to stay connected and maybe have you on for a brief interview after November and tell us how it goes. I mean, because I get these great, powerful, informative guests like you, and I move on to the next one. But I'd love to update this loop and have you come on and tell us. We could probably do an entire other show about what happened.
We could. No, I'd be very happy to, Gina. It's, you know, spreading the word is what it's about, really, and it's just great to share this little, like I said, unknown corner of the world with people. But this issue is just about values and, you know, whether we value these last places and where we place that value. Is it in the commodity of the fish or is it in the ecosystem? And for me, it's the, and I think actually most people when they understand this, it's about the natural assets of the Ross Sea, which make our life so much more special and interesting and unique. And even though we don't get there, it's really nice to know that these places exist. In New Zealand, we have decimated huge proportion of the native wildlife and fauna, and we now fight really hard to keep the last of them alive because of the value that they bring to our lives and our culture. And in global terms, the Ross Sea should be seen as contributing in that way to our lives.
It should be a huge priority. I mean, it is, when you talk about the pristine, untouched beauty of it, it should be top of mind for people that really care about the planet. And, you know, Peter, it's funny because when I started doing my research for the show, I always want to go there. I always want to go to some of these places that our great guests have spent, you know, a great deal of time with. But the last thing in the world we want, really, is for people to go there. We want to see it through the eyes of your lens. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it is in a way, Gina, but in the argument, I mean, people do have to, you know, turn a coin. And what I've actually said in New Zealand, because I first went down on a tourist boat, and the tourism down there is really well regulated.
Awesome.
Tourists take photos. They don't take fish out of the ecosystem.
Right.
And you create ambassadors and people that can share and spread the love about the Ross Sea. So I think that tourism is, in the case of the Ross Sea, a good thing. You know, there's far better ways to be getting value out of the Ross Sea than taking fish from the ecosystem. If the world knew about it and how special it was, and should be a place that we can all share and celebrate and go to. And I think in the end of the day, it would be far more valuable if it was pristine, because as everything else gets depleted, it becomes more and more precious and its value grows.
I am so glad I asked you that question. So lots of us do want to put it on our bucket list because it would be, like you said, then that we become champions for and spokespersons for the beauty that we got to witness. So there it goes on my bucket list. Peter Long, we have to end this show.
Peter Young, sorry,
the last C.
Right.
I apologize for that. Peter Young, thank you for showing up in my world. Thank you for what you're doing for the planet. And we wish you all the very best in November. Everybody make it a great green week. And we will bring Peter Young back to hear what happened for the next chapter. Thanks, everybody.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Gina.